Today we are talking to Bill, the CEO at GetClear, and we discuss new ways of measuring developer output, what it takes to be an effective communicator, and how to hire and retain the best talent. All of this right here, right now on the Modern CTO Podcast.
Here we go.
This is the Modern CTO Podcast.
Hey, how you doing?
What up? How you doing, buddy?
Pretty good. Still a little bit early in PST, but I'm waking up.
Oh, nice. We could have done it later in the afternoon, but we got you bright and early and fresh.
This is supposed to be when a person's at their best, right? Like when they wake up and I have all this energy and the coffee's starting to flow through my veins and I'm getting there.
So when you wake up, do you go like on a run? Like how do you get started?
I just sort of drag myself out of bed. I think that someday I aspire to be one of those people that like gets up and like does something positive, like exercise or like starts the day off on the right foot. But right now it's just like yank myself out and just like trudge to whatever my first thing is. And then once I get the caffeine start going through my veins, it gets better.
Yeah, it took me a while to like start the exercise stuff in the morning, but then it's like anything, right? You build momentum and it's like impossible to stop.
Yeah. How consistently do you do it?
7 days a week.
Wow. Damn. Yeah. Look at you, Mr. Goals and the ambition.
I wouldn't say, I don't know. I just, like it's addictive, right? Like, so you, like I start, I wake up, I do like a 20 minute run, like run like a mile, mile and a half. And then make some breakfast, see the kids, and then go to the gym and lift weights for like an hour, and then come home, shower, and then go to work.
Wow, that is that's far beyond what my like expectations or my long term goals would just be to do the first part of what you're describing, the 20 minute, you know, like mile or mile and a half. Does seem like a good way to sort of wake yourself up, right?
Yeah. So I noticed, like I wouldn't have continued doing it if there wasn't a benefit, right? Like,
yeah.
Because you and I, we had an awesome lunch a couple weeks ago, and we were talking about a lot about like personal and professional development. And there is just such a difference when like I'm weight training and exercising and as far as how my mind works.
I can see why it would be so, especially for a job like yours where so much of it is interacting and being alert. Like that's what you're doing, right? Like you're prepping your brain and like the body is what gives the brain all its energy. So it makes sense.
Oh, I never did this as an engineer. This is all post-engineering. Because like the socialization of it, and you're a CEO, so you know, I think you'd probably get like a lot of benefit of it. But that transition of doing deep work to then interacting with people is really tough. It's really tough for me to do. Like it's hard. It's taxing on my brain to like be able to
absolutely.
Do it.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a tough context switch.
So I want to make sure that we get started with talking about GetClear because I mean I'm just like it's like layers for me, right? Like you first get exposed to something and you're like, okay, this is cool. I've seen this a couple times before, but then you're like, all right, well here's what makes it different. And then I was, you know, we were kind of going back and forth on like sales copy and ideas and things like that and like benefits. And you know, I read it again leading up to this and I checked in on it a couple times. You know, you got to let that break happen mentally. And that now I'm like in love with it.
Oh, thank you.
And you're a really good writer too. Like I didn't notice until actually today that you had like in one of your bios, there's a line that you actually like writing, but you are like really good at writing.
I think that's very generous. It's something that I think any CEO or person that is sort of the face of their company or creating the content for their company, it's even if it's not something that anybody starts being good at, nobody starts being good at being a manager either. But if it's important, then I think you have to learn to like have the discipline to cultivate more expertise in that. And so for writing, I've never like been an avid reader, just because I have so many other things in my life that are competing for my attention. But the internet makes it possible, even if you're not an avid reader, to be able to dig into some topics really deeply from a few people that can present content in, you know, bite-sized chunks, like Wait But Why, Paul Graham, Slate Star Codex. Those are a couple of my gold standards, and seeing how they do it and seeing how they are able to stay so concise and to create value for the people that are reading all of those, I just try to figure out how they're doing that and how I can create that same value for people that are trying to learn about developer metrics. And so I think every year I, you know, spend more time on this and I try to get a little bit better as a writer, but I still certainly don't consider myself an accomplished writer. I just consider myself somebody that has to communicate and tries to pay as much attention as possible to what the really smart people are doing to be able to create that communication, right?
In one of my favorite books about writing comes from, it's like Robert McKee. He's like a script writer. But if you watch how people talk in scripts, like if you read like a movie script, it just doesn't, it's not how people actually dialogue, but you watch it and your brain fills in the blanks. And so I found like, you know, I read a lot of books on writing and I've had to, you know, communicate with board members and do all that as a founder. But this was like relevant, but like completely over in a different area. So it gave a fresh perspective. Like, here's how you write stories professionally. And then you can leverage some of those, you know, skills and attributes like in your work to better understand how people perceive it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I mean, there are so many different elements to it. And Paul Graham actually has been talking about writing more on Twitter lately. It's kind of become his main, I guess, his last hobby standing as he's kind of transitioned into being a father more than the founder of Y Combinator. And he's had a lot to say about sort of all of the not tricks that go into writing well, but the tenets of being able to be an effective communicator and being able to consistently surprise your readers and to have you know, material content beyond the first sentence of every paragraph and all these different aspects that go into it, where you can, you know, spend a lifetime trying to get better as a communicator and trying to become more concise, and it will still be interesting because there's still more to learn there. And so I love learning, and it's really fun to try to get a little bit better at it. And we've definitely seen a lot of positive results from my efforts to be a writer by way of the traffic that comes to Get Clear, which at this point is still at least 50%, I want to say, the content marketing, you know, the articles that we write for people that are trying to learn more about measuring developer. They're trying to learn more about how all the different products in this space compare to one another. And every week we're getting more traffic than the week before because, you know, I keep trying to polish and make more useful the resources that we make available to people to get answers to those kinds of questions.
No, and one of the things that just popped into my head right now is, I don't know if I shared this with you at lunch, but one of the biggest things that I've learned is with content marketing is separating the individual writing the content with the person who's going to layer in call to actions. Did I say that to you at lunch?
No, you didn't. I didn't get that one. Yeah, that's a good idea though.
It's like, it's so impossible because I ran into this, like the best experiences in life are the ones that you bang your head against the wall for like ever. And then you figure it out from someone else when you're like crying, like I can't get it. So, yeah, separation of roles. Like, don't be the person that writes the article, but then also tries to figure out how to convert people in that content to it. Like, have a separate human being do it because you get emotionally attached to the writing. And like, to, you don't imagine it like how you're going to do the call to actions. It's just, I don't know how to articulate it well because this is one of the first times I'm talking about it. But experiencing it, if you have a separate person look at your beautiful piece of work of value, of content value, and then they figure out how to layer in call to actions, that's like the winning sauce.
Do you think that part of that is that as the writer, to be able to create the most effective piece, you have to be kind of single-minded in what you're trying to accomplish? Is that part of it, you think?
I think it is. And I've even tried to like take breaks because, you know, when I wrote the book, you have to like go back and do separate takes. And I even tried to take breaks and like come back like a week later to the writing and lay in the stuff. And for me, maybe I just didn't continue down that path long enough. I couldn't get it. And then I was talking about with some other like way smart people in marketing, and they're like, oh yeah, yeah, you need to separate those two roles and just have a person who's really skilled at the conversion part, because they're going to try different conversions and constant, and then just separate the people, have the people bringing the value and the people figuring out how to convert the value. And I was like, oh, I just hired someone on Upwork and she did like amazing. And it just worked super quickly.
See, this is what I'm talking about. Every day you can learn something new about writing and become a little bit more of a craftsman in that domain. And I think that's part of what makes writing so interesting and exciting to me is stuff like this, where I haven't quite thought of that before, but it definitely brings into relief how the process of creating the writing is something where you're already, it's so difficult because you're trying to put yourself in the shoes of not just one reader, but you're trying to put yourself in the shoes of all these different readers that are going to come across it from all different contexts. And that's hard enough unto itself without the whole domain of how is this going to benefit the writer, you know, how is this going to benefit our company with this content. So my approach has usually been to try to just not even think about how we're going to convert people that read the content, which probably isn't the greatest from a business standpoint, but I just try to focus on making it as useful as possible for people and kind of as short as possible, which I think I have had mixed results with. A lot of my articles are 2,000 or 3,000 words, so it's not the shortest, but the shortest that it can be that still gets across the questions that people are going to ask and sort of the dives into the details where the details are important. And yeah, I think to your point that having that be the single focus and having it be a separate area of discipline to try to actually convert that into desirable actions from the reader makes a lot of sense.
So how did you come up with Get Clear?
Yeah, so it was very much a product of necessity. It was my response to trying to run an efficient development team on our Bonanza.com marketplace and just being completely unable to time efficiently understand what the people on the team were working on and how I could help them become more effective in their job. And so as we talked about, I'm a sort of a developer by practice and profession. I've been programming since I was 12, I want to say. And so I've always been kind of obsessed with, maybe is the right word, writing code and how to improve code and how to make sure an architecture, you know, remains pliable as the as it grows and as it expands. And being able to do that is a pretty much a full-time job unto itself, but a great manager can do so much more than a single developer. A great manager can take a team of people that are all focused on that goal and get them in lockstep and get them working in the area that they're best at. But with the time that I had in a day after coding, I just had no realistic avenue through which I could understand what the developers on my team, which at the time I want to say we had 10 or 15 developers, I had no avenue to understand what they were working on. It was really frustrating because all the time building the site, you know, we had a team of, well, originally just me, but a lot of Bonanza's history was about 3 to 5 developers. And at that point, you kind of can keep track of what everyone's working on. You kind of can know like all the directories that are changing and what conventions people are using, what libraries they're using. But after you get past about 5, it gets a lot more difficult. And so the first version of Get Clear was a response to that. It was simply a tool that we wanted to be able to aggregate all the different repos that we were working in. We didn't want to have to click from repo to repo like GitHub made us do. We wanted to be able to see the specific commits that people were making over the course of a day, whereas on GitHub, you know, all we had was basically a list. Here's 50 commits. Here's a list of 50 commits that happened today, but no context as to, you know, if you're a busy person that only has 10 minutes to review these commits, which ones should you start with? And then being able to see how people are ramping up when they get hired and seeing how that compares to past people that have been hired. All of those were kind of this, these really painful points, along with reviewing, annual reviews, where I would have to try to remember, like, what did this developer work on 6 months ago or 9 months ago or whatever? All of these were things that were really time consuming and that I felt like I was doing a very bad job at, you know, once the Bonanza team grew. And so GetClear was a response to that. GetClear was a tool that we started building in order to allow us to initially simply aggregate together all the commits that are happening across, I don't know, at the time it was maybe 10 repos, and isolate the ones where the most work was happening so that we could spend, you know, if I only had 10 minutes to review commits, I could review the three commits that really were pushing the ball forward that day within our repo. And then, and that could at least guide me towards answers on how the new developers on the team are getting up to speed and sort of what the high points that a person had worked on over the last year were, so that when I was doing those kind of manager specific goals, I wasn't just, you know, relying on gut feeling and I wasn't just relying on intuition, both of which I am deeply suspect of. I was relying on data, and I was able to make, I think, much more informed decisions, even in the early days of GetClear when our metric was much less reliable. And, you know, we were just kind of trying to figure out, is this even possible to build something like this? But it was, you know, from the earliest days, it was creating a lot of value. And obviously, we've gone a long way since then. So that was why we started it in the first place.
And we were going back and forth with these, like these notes. And I was like, this is actually a really cool service. And then I realized that you own the note service that we are using too.
Yeah, I'm passionate about tools, because I believe that every person, you know, has whatever luck gave them in terms of their talents, you know, the things they're naturally going to be good at. But beyond that, what we're going to get done is a function of the tools we're using. And, you know, a lot of my life, I've been a handyman, and I probably didn't own a electric drill until I was 25, you know? And so much of my life I spent like manually, like turning a screwdriver. And when I got that drill, I'm like, I can get 10 times more done now. And I think that's what I'm trying to do with both AmpleNote, the note-taking app that you refer to, and with GetClear, is I'm trying to build tools that allow me, with the very limited mental faculties I have, to be able to get a lot of stuff done by having much more leverage over sort of the domains in which I reside, which are, you know, programming and productivity. And so the fact that myself and our team get to help other people when they adopt these tools and get leverage themselves is icing on the cake, you know, but for ourselves, we're dogfooding these things every day, you know, because they are the key to what allows us to run our business. We need these tools. And so I think that's a great way to be oriented when you're setting goals and when you're sort of road mapping what a product can potentially be. So that's sort of it. We have more work than I think is reasonable for a team of our size between the different projects we're maintaining, but we love it and we're using them every day. So it seems to work out.
Yeah. So I want to talk about like my favorite things about it, right? Because okay. I spent so much time researching it and looking at it. So like, and here's why. So the first one would be like the answering the question, who are domain experts? Because before we met, like months leading up to meeting, it's been a topic of conversation that's happened a lot on the podcast, people, you know, discussing like, oh, we're making these tribes, like Slack channels where we have like experts in different areas. And so you can go in there and learn all about this, like who's the best at, you know, like Redis or whatever it may be, whatever is important to the company. And then when I was looking at like you in the notes, one of the things you had was you had this report and it could show you like who are the domain experts within the organization based on who works on what like type of code. And I thought that was amazing. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. That's, I totally agree that it's sort of a very common and maybe underappreciated aspect of what a good CTO does. They identify, or VP of engineering as well, they identify who is already good at different aspects of contribution within their repository. So It's really common in the teams that I've been a part of that you'll have somebody that's really expert in, say, the libraries or the sort of the underlying platform like Ruby on Rails. You'll have another person that's really great at models. You'll have another person that's really great at sort of background jobs and asynchronous execution and making sure that stays performant. And then you kind of go further and further up the stack till you have people that are expert in HTML and people that are experts in JavaScript. And obviously there's going to be overlap because a lot of people are working in different domains. But I think that especially if you're a project manager and you're trying to understand who do I go to with my questions or who do I send this ticket to that's a really difficult ticket in a domain that's going to require somebody that really knows, you know, the ins and outs of React, for instance. And those are really hard questions to get answers to unless you sort of methodically observed a team over the course of several years, in which case you can eventually like develop an intuition for that. But again, like we're trying to build tools that create leverage. We don't want people to have to wait years before they can really intuitively understand what where the people on their team are experts. And so what we do with this report that you're talking about is we take the line impact, which is our metric for how much the code base is evolving from commit to commit. And we are able to basically analyze that in all the different dimensions and all the different types of code that we already recognize just out of the box with GitClear. So pretty much all the kinds of code I've offhandedly used as examples, Ruby on Rails, models, jobs, JavaScript, all these are code categories that GitClear already recognizes. And so when a developer is just doing their job, when they're just making commits that happen to that involve all these different types of files, we first of all know how much experience they have with it because we can see that they've authored more code than anybody else over the last year in, for instance, React. But then we can also get a sense for their velocity because one of the other really hard elements of what GitClear offers that none of our competitors do is we are able to approximate the time required per commit. We're able to basically estimate how much time a developer had to spend to implement whatever feature, branch, or ticket that they're working on. And so once you have time and distance, you have velocity. And velocity is, I think, a really valuable way to be able to compare how people are relating to different areas within the code so you can figure out who's the fastest at writing models, who's done the most at writing models. And so then when you have a question or when you need a really important feature to be implemented, again, you're not guessing, you're consulting data that's already available and you have the answers at your fingertips to be able to understand who on the team is going to be best suited to answer those questions. Or if it's a new developer, they might not even know themselves sort of what their areas of expertise are. So you can help a new developer sort of learn about themselves through these kinds of metrics. So yeah, that's one report that I think I've been really excited about and a lot of our customers are as well.
The other one I really like, so I kind of ranked my favorites in order of like business value. Well, that one was because it's just been a popular conversation because I was telling people like to go check like New Relic and stuff, you know, just to find out like what areas are really popular in their application. But one of the other ones that I really liked was not waiting like 3 to 6 months before helping new hires. So how do you do that?
Yeah, so that is, I think, probably our most popular feature and probably our most valuable feature. It's basically a cohort report. And so I'm guessing a lot of your listeners are familiar with the idea of a cohort report, but basically you look at, for everybody on the team that was at the same point in their tenure, how did they compare at that point? And so what we're able to do is we can look at the full commit history for developers for however much history you have on your repo. And we can say for everybody that you've previously hired, for their first, say, 2 weeks, for their first 3 weeks, for their first 4 weeks, how much code were they writing in that time? Because it's often really nebulous unless you're a lead developer that's paying very close attention to this new developer, how they're ramping up and whether you are putting them in a position to succeed. It's really easy to forget if you're a developer or a manager or a CTO that's been working on a team for years, that when you first come onto the team, you have to set up an environment. You have to learn all the systems that are at play. You have to sort of use whatever documentation is available to understand and orient yourself as to what the conventions of the project are and where the code in the project exists. And so if you're not, if you don't have a means by which to measure how quickly people are getting up to speed, then all of these different areas that make it really hard to start at a company can be sort of neglected or ignored because you don't realize how hard you're making it for people to start and get up to speed quickly on your team. And so what the cohort report does is it allows a manager basically from the day the person is hired, but I think realistically you probably need 4 to 6 weeks of data to be able to actually see patterns in what the in how the developer is ramping up. But every week we can show, this is the last 50 people you've hired, this is how much they got done on their first week, this is how much you know, the new developer has got done on their first week, week two, like week three, week four. And so very quickly you start to be able to aggregate statistics around the number of weeks that the developer is performing about average to past hires, above the level of past hires, or below the level of past hires, in which case you usually want to have a conversation, kind of understand what the factors are there. But the way that we've seen customers use this and the way that we've used it ourselves is as an opportunity for us to identify when we're doing a bad job of making it easy for people to set up an environment that allows developers to hit the ground running, or if we've done a bad job of documenting sort of what the systems are, then those first weeks are going to be a little bit slower. And so what we want to see is every developer we hire getting up to speed more quickly than the developer before them, which is possible if you have the right systems to measure how what the experience of a developer is when they're joining your team, and sort of the ability to understand what the roadblocks are for those early developers in terms of what's making it difficult for them to start contributing and just jump into the code base. So I think it's a super important question because you know, a lot of what CTOs have to do is hire the best possible team and retain the best possible team, probably VP of engineering even more than CTOs. But both of those jobs are very, I think, specifically and rightly concerned with making sure that they have the best people in place. And if you hire somebody and then just aren't able to go and help them within those first critical few weeks when they might be struggling to get up to speed, it can sort of, I think, color their interpretation of the company throughout their tenure, you know. So you really want them to have a positive experience at first, and you really want them to be successful from the day that they're hired. And that's what the cohort report is trying to create.
So what's your couple favorite top ones? Or I guess we'll just say, what's your most favorite one? Even if we've already talked about it, I'm just curious.
Yeah, well, honestly, my favorite one is probably the first one that the developer is taken to, or the manager is taken to when they log in, which is maybe no surprise since I have a say in which one we go to after logging in. But it's the commit activity browser. It's the view of the code where it allows me to basically answer that first question that I'd talked about when you'd asked me why we built this product. I want to know who's working on what today, and who is stuck, and like, what are the big changes that are happening in code, so that I can know when there are new conventions or opportunities or bugs or anything that is coming into the repo that could create problems or opportunities down the line. The commit activity browser makes it really easy to spot all that stuff basically from the instant you log in. And it's just kind of fun and cool to look at. You know, my original history as a developer was making Game Boy games. And so myself and the CTO actually of our company worked together on this game called Disney Friends, which was just this like ridiculous piece of IP that was like a Nintendogs clone. Do you remember Nintendogs for the Nintendo DS?
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah,
yeah. It was a big hit 10 years ago or whatever, where you like take care of your dog. We played this game.
It's like advanced Tamagotchis.
Exactly. It was. So we made Tamagotchis, myself and the CTO. We're really proud of this. We're not really proud of it, but we made Tamagotchis out of like Stitch, and we made Tamagotchis out of Nemo from Finding Nemo, and from all this nice Disney IP, because our studio was tasked with making this Nintendo's ripoff. But what I took from that history, which was several years, like my formative years as a developer, was that it really matters if it feels good to use a game, and like all those like swishes and swoops, all those transition effects between different states within the game contributed so much to what our review scores were for the game, and just from how much people experienced enjoying the game. And so I've tried to bring that same sort of feel and those same sorts of exciting transition effects and interactions into the commit activity browser. And so there's a lot of like, you click a bubble and like the thing scrunches up, you know, and the things fly away. And I just try to make it kind of feel like a game. And it's an effective way to sort of distract oneself from the fact that, you know, reviewing code is sometimes a little bit, it's not something people look forward to, but it's so important to review code that if we can make it more fun, it's a big win for everybody, I think.
Yeah, it has a very, like, not to get too nerdy, but it reminds me of like a D3 JS library, mm-hmm. like the interactions.
It's very smooth. It is a D3 library.
Oh, okay, good. Cool. <That's,
laughs> your intuition is on the mark. Yeah, that's the only way to be able to get the physics that we needed to be able to make it feel like more fun or lifelike, you know, as these commits are bouncing around and you're sort of arranging where they fell in a day, like, or a week or whatever, with whatever range the person wants to browse commits for. So yeah, the D3 has a really great physics library, and that's kind of the cornerstone of what makes games feel fun and interactive and relatable, is they have that touch point to the real world. And so that's an aspect of what I incorporated into the commit activity browser and trying to make it feel fun.
Yeah, after I saw that, I was like, I was talking with Jake and some other people at the office, and I said, you know, we should take it when people unlock their badges and are like, when they finish the course for our leadership program, like, we should animate the badge like being unlocked versus it just popping up and being like badge. It should be like the actual like intricacies of the badge. And so I have like an animator guy that I go to whenever I need like small animations, but those little finishing touches on it, like there's a time and a place when they go into the project,
yep.
right? Like after you're very clear about what the business value is and you have some customers, like you figure it out. But they're so small, and they're just really important in polishing the user experience. And I love you guys because your AmpleNote, I didn't actually look a whole lot at Bonanza?
Yeah, you got it, Bonanza.com.
Okay. Bonanza. I didn't look at that a lot, but I spent a lot of time at AmpleNote. And I spent a lot of time in GetClear, and your design, like, just shout out. I hope your designers are listening to this podcast, because it's amazing. Like, it's so beautiful. I just, whenever I recognize great design, I like to tell people, good job.
Well, it's hard to make time for a lot of those finishing touches, right? Because that's not, you're not going to be able to substantiate, like, this is the ROI we're going to get from this last 5% of polish. You know, you're not going to probably be able to measure that animating that badge that is unlocked when a person is able to reach the achievement that you're setting for them. Like, you're not going to be able to measure how that 5% improves people's happiness or satisfaction. You just have to sort of trust that it will. But since you can't measure it, you know, so much of our business processes are built around focusing on measurable victories. And so it's sometimes hard to wedge in time for satisfying interactions. To me, it's just sort of a visceral pleasure that I get from using a app or an experience that feels like it's polished and feels like it's connective and has nice transitions there. And so I definitely appreciate the compliment, and we'll send it along to our designers that we've tried to imbue that throughout the products that we're building, that kind of satisfying last 5% that goes a little bit above and beyond what's necessary or what's going to be measurable, but hopefully is creating user experiences that people can recognize and enjoy. And even if they can't pinpoint why they like it so much, they just feel good when they're using it.
It's like it's like being in a like a nice store. Like, you know, you definitely want to go shop in Target more so than other stores, because it's got like there's a nice experience. Like, I don't care if I'm paying a dollar or two more. Like, I like being in this environment. And if you have to work in an analytics program, or, you know, you have that need to do these things and understand these things, you want to be in one that's like really great.
Yep. I'd say that the other factor that goes into that that is sometimes overlooked is the speed of the experience, right? Because this doesn't apply to Target as much, but for websites and for user experiences that a person is going to have online, you know, it's the same feature that you're implementing, whether it takes 5 seconds to load or 500 milliseconds to load, but the experience of the user is going to be very, very different if every time they want to have some scratch some itch, they have to wait 5 seconds before that itch gets scratched. And so that's another, I think, really important tenet of a site that people enjoy using and that serves its users well, is it has to be fast to sort of imbue that all the rest of that polish and all the rest of that experience within the sort of wrapper that the user gets. And so that's another aspect that we try to be really good at, and it's obviously difficult because it's sort of the counter to complexity. Like, we want to create really rich and really informative graphs, and the more richness and information is in a graph, the slower it's going to be unless you work really hard to make it fast. And so they're kind of two poles that are always pulling at each other, and there's going to be a balance there. But I think that game users are, video game users are a great audience that really helps bring about or I think communicate what a lot of our primal desires are in terms of a great user experience. It should be fast, it should be connective, it should be beautiful, and it should thus be pleasant to use. And to whatever extent that we're accomplishing those things, you know, that's what we're trying to do, that's what we're here for. And you want to just combine that with creating value for people to sort of make the whole package of what gets a person excited to use a new tool or a new product they haven't tried before.
So when you're going through the sales process of this, like, who is buying and why are they buying?
So it's a lot of different reasons. And I think that there is a lot, it's reflective of the fact that there's so many unmet needs and so many opportunities that exist right now in this space. Imagine that, you know, a lot of your listeners might still be earlier in their career, and they might still be sort of getting up to speed as CTOs or VPs of engineering. And what they're probably doing, which is kind of what I was doing earlier in my career, is working really, really hard to, you know, potentially really long weeks to be able to get an edge and to be able to understand things better than their peers can understand them. And working hard is great. And I, you know, have sort of been lucky enough to end up in a domain where even if I'm putting in a lot of hours, it doesn't feel like work because it's just fun to be able to solve these problems and to be able to create these experiences like we've been talking about. But when you sort of run out of hard work energy and you run out of smarts, all that's left is the tools that you have and how those are going to be able to make you more effective. And so when it comes to what people want to get out of our product, it's really, there's a quite a breadth. It's sort of, I think, similar to the list of things that people expect out of a CTO, or at least there's a strong correlation there. Some of the things that people expect out of a CTO, they expect them, or a VP of engineering, they expect them to have some sense for who the domain experts are, like we talked about, some sense for how quickly people are getting up to speed and whether it's easy for them to get up to speed, some sense for where the technical debt resides in the project, and then just, are the policies of the company, like, are those conducive to developers getting work done and being happy? I would say those are probably a handful of the questions that people bring to us most often. And so our demo process, or our process of introducing users to our product, is just asking them, what are your biggest problems? Because you know, over the course of all the demos we've given, we've collected a very wide breadth of different problems that people will bring to us. I guess PRs and like communication in the PR process is another really big bucket of problems that people will sometimes bring about. And we have solutions for those problems. We have kind of incrementally built our product around understanding what are the needs of the CTOs that come to us and that have been working really hard, and you know, they're smart people, but they just only have so much time in a day. And we want to be their performance enhancing drug, you know, like we want to be the resource that they can consult to be able to answer whatever their engineering questions are. And if they have a need that GetClear doesn't yet address, well, those are a lot of our best features. Right now we've been working with a user that's onboarding from a small company, and he has brought us a lot of good ideas around being able to identify when a JIRA ticket is filed as a bug, and how long does it take for us to resolve the high priority bugs that get filed into JIRA, and what can we learn about those bugs, both in terms of how long it takes us to resolve them and what code was changed in the course of resolving the bug, which is sort of an indicator for where the bug came about, like which commit, which developer, what are the circumstances that created the code that needed to be changed to resolve this bug. And so that is, I think, a really interesting question to be able to have better insight into where bugs are being created and how quickly they're being resolved. And so that's another example of a feature that just by asking people what they want and listening, we're able to really rapidly evolve our product in that direction. And so maybe an overbroad answer to your initial question, but yeah, there's all sorts of different areas that we'll tap into in the course of a demo. And it really just depends on sort of what the CTO has identified as sort of the biggest opportunities or the biggest learning areas that they want to be able to focus and better understand within their team, because we have tools for pretty much whatever those problems they're going to bring to us are.
Have you narrowed like your ideal customer profile? Like, we want companies that are like 100 million in revenue with 200 to 300 people that are growing at like 40% year over year, because we know that they have this one like meaty thing that we just do amazing at.
Yeah, well, I would say that it's evolving. I think that through a lot of our history, our sweet spot has been the teams that are in a position like I described Bonanza in, you know, when we built GetClear, teams that are scaling from having 3 to 5 developers where the CTO could really have the time and energy to comprehend every change that is happening, and they're scaling up to more like 10 or 15 or 20 engineers. That's really been a sweet spot for us, because those teams, they crave tools like the commit activity browser and like the directory browser, tools that allow them at scale to be able to see what their developers are working on and not have to have a stand-up meeting every morning where you have, you know, 15 or 20 minutes spent talking and 15 or 20 minutes spent preparing for it, and then 15 or 20 minutes spent afterwards sort of digesting the takeaways from those meetings. I'm not saying all stand-up meetings need to be taken off the calendar, but I'm saying there's definitely a cost to those. And I think a lot of the small teams feel that cost acutely. And I know that we have acutely felt the cost of any sort of fixed scheduled meetings that we subject our engineers to. And so that has been traditionally the sweet spot of GetClear, has been those smaller teams that want to understand what their developers are working on, what tickets their developers are working on, and what they should be focusing on in terms of the domains that they send different tickets towards, and the domain expertise of the developers. But what we really were finding as GetClear grows in popularity is that there's also a really big opportunity for larger teams in terms of being able to compare the performance that they're seeing across regions or across different agile methodologies that the sort of sub teams within a large enterprise will be adopting, because in effect, every team, when you have a really large company, and I'll try to use an example of somebody that isn't a customer of ours yet, say Microsoft, you have all of these probably thousands of teams that are all kind of little experiments. They're all little productivity experiments in a sense, where they're going to have their own sort of agile practices. They're going to have their own meeting structure. They're going to have their own, you know, conventions around what should be filed as a JIRA and whatnot. And so it's really difficult using really any tool that exists to understand, like, how can we compare the output of these experiments? How can we measure which of these experiments is really working well and sort of understand why it's working well? And so that's a new market that is really starting to catch on amongst the new customers that we're seeing, is the market for being able to identify which of the teams that are within an organization are getting a lot done and are not creating tech debt in the process, and then being able to sort of interview those teams and model more of the organization, or at least expose more of the organization to the practices that are working really well for these sub teams. And so that's I think a really big opportunity for us, you know, in 2020 and beyond, is being able to help managers interpret the results of all these teams, all these experiments, these productivity experiments that are happening, and take the best from all of those, so that the entire organization can sort of have this cross-pollination of ideas and practices and meeting structures that will work best that measurably work best for whatever the company's domain is. Obviously, if you're a fintech company, your concerns are going to be a lot different than if you're a healthcare company, or if you're a Silicon Valley startup in, you know, B2B space or whatever. They're all different kinds of companies, need different kinds of practices. And so there's not any one right answer, but you can help your management find the teams that have kind of naturally evolved their way to the best answers, and then spread those teams' information throughout the rest of the organization. So I think that the answer is a little bit equivocating, and that I'm not able to say a single user group that has been the only one that gets value from GetClear, but there's been a few different groups that have evolved over time that really seem to tap into what we're offering and get value from it.
We were just doing this exercise this past week, where we took the customers, all of our past customers, based on how profitable they were for us. And that was like one metric. And then all of our past customers based on who's having the most success, right? Like, who's like most that. Excited about it. And then all of our customers based on who we liked the most, like just doing, like, we like spending time with, right? Like, yeah. Who we want to be stuck in a room with. And then we took those three sets of data, and we came up with like our top, you know, 5-10 customers, because we want to figure out like exactly how we attracted them, exactly why they bought from us, because we are like getting to the point where we realize, okay, this is gonna be a long, you know, we're 2 or 3 years into this, and we're like, we're gonna spend another 5-10 years doing this. And so we wanna make sure that we find and service the customers who we enjoy spending the most time with, who are having the most success and whatever. And wouldn't you know, they all came in from the same value prop. We've tried like 15 value props, but they've all come in from the same value prop. I know. They are, most of them are physically located, like geographically, like near each other. And and then so we were like, now that made it really clear, because, you know, the first couple of years you're just trying stuff, you know, you're changing your sales copy, you're trying new value propositions, you're trying to solve problems, you're talking to people, you're getting customers, you're taking who you can, you know, letting everyone sort of use the product, and then you're seeing like people having more success than others, and you're like, why? And it's like, okay, well, at some companies their culture is different, so we just learned something about our business, like we are really good when a company has this culture. So how do we identify like companies that have that culture? Because I would rather have my sales team like be able to tap a company on the shoulder and say, we need to talk to you, because our product only really works with companies that are like yours, that have a culture like yours, that look like yours, that are at your size. And when you do use these products, you were just fanatical customers who love us, who get huge results, and you're going to tell all your friends, and here's the case study of the other five people that are just like you that have done this too. And you're like, well, that's, I never get that type of message on LinkedIn. You know, I never get approached. I get bombarded with junk. I never get somebody saying, look, you have to take a look at our product because you're the only type of company that has like huge success with it. And you need to see this because you're going to love it. So we did that exercise and it really helped us like with our clarity for this coming year.
Yeah, that's fascinating. So what do you think, what was it? Which audience was it that had connected and why do you think that was? If it's not too much of a diversion, it's just interesting
idea. So they tend companies that have people that like want to improve. Like that's the first one. Like you cannot buy our management training for people who don't want to grow. So if that's in the leaders, if that's in the culture of the company, then they love it. The second thing is they're usually over like 100 to 1,000 people, like 100 to 1,000 people. And they're tech, usually in tech. They're like analytics companies or we have one animation company. They do like animation for like Happy Feet, like different kids movies. And so yeah, those types of companies, just they tend to be in technology, they tend to be making technology, and they tend to be, you know, over $50 million in revenue, about 100 to 1,000 people. And we just noticed that they have a lot of success with it. And so now we're like, that actually made everything really clear. Because the biggest problem, you know, like you've got to know this, you're a CEO, right? Like you have a product and there's too many customers. Like there's too many, it's like, where do I go to enterprises? Do I try to sell to them? And however you pick, it determines what your sales process looks like what type of salespeople you hire, how you get the leads, how you service the leads. I mean, is every single one like a demo, or do they go free trial first? Like all of that structures back. And so there's just too many possibilities. You can just run in circles and get real diluted real fast. And for me, that was like my biggest struggle, like looking back on it, like that's my biggest struggle is like we loved the product so much and we knew so many people could use it, but we didn't have focus. So 2 years of just trying all types of customers and all types of value products just made it really, really clear what we need to do for the next couple of years.
Yeah, I think really ties into something that's been true for me throughout my career that I've observed, which is that a lot of the best products have a really specific sort of vision of what the product is going to offer, and equally specific vision about what the product isn't going to offer, so that you kind of avoid becoming, you know, Microsoft Word circa 2010. I'm not sure if Word's still the same way as it used to be. Exactly. Or I'd say Evernote circa 2015, more recently, you know, like work chat. Like we really want to like have chat in our note taking app, you know.
Wait,
like
Evernote's doing that?
They used to. I don't know. They went through a really dark period. I hope they've come out of it. Or actually, I guess I don't hope they've come out of it since we're competing against them now. But
ample note for the win.
but Evernote, you know, I think is a perfect example of a tool that anybody can use it, right? And so I think they've had a hard time figuring out like who are our target customers, what is our vision, like what is the key piece of value that we're going to just go so deep into that we blow people's minds, that we understand them so well. And I think Evernote spent a lot of years, at least in the early 2010s, not having such a clear idea of who they were building it for and why they were building it. And so they went on all these, you know, would say like wild goose chases, but they went on all these misadventures of implementing features that are really only tangentially related to what I would consider their core value proposition, allowing people to capture all their ideas and information and have that organized. And because of that, they both wasted time not working on advancing the core functionality that people would really need, but they also added clutter to the UI. They also like made it more difficult for the people that just want to use it for its best purpose, because there was that much less clarity around where you should be focusing your attention. And so I love that you guys have been able to narrow down, like, these are the organizations that just, when we tap into these types of companies that are passionate about growth, that are passionate about improving and becoming a better version of themselves every day, those are the people that we can create a ton of value for. And so what do those people need? How can we use that to build the minimum set of features that are really easy for that group of people to understand and use? And if other groups of people can get value from that, that's great. And maybe you eventually sort of try to acknowledge those other groups in whatever ways can make sense in context. But I think that it's still really important to have a solid idea of why you're building a product, who you're building the product for, and what the minimum functionality is that you can get by with, and thereby avoid sort of the easy heap or the easy problem that a lot of companies fall into, which is just this dog pile of features. You know, this, we're just going to add more value props. We're going to add more customer endorsements and testimonials. We're going to add more widgets and more things for people to click on. You know, like it's an easy path to ruin, and it's a really understandable place for people to end up, since you just get there by listening to everybody and trying to accommodate everybody. But I think the best products have a more specific viewpoint about who they're trying to satisfy. And sounds like you're building one of those products yourself by way of understanding who your target ideal customers are that have gotten the most value, and then building something that's really optimized around those people, right?
Right. And like for you, like you want the people using GetClear who are going to have the most success with it. Like, because what they're going to do is everybody talks, like they're going to go around and just scream it from the mountaintops, like, this is actually really cool. And the thing is, it takes time to get into it and see it. So it's like, yep. You know, how do we get, like, how do we reduce the time to value, right? Like, how do we get it so that they can see the value as quickly as possible? And I love how you guys had done that, where you offer like a sample repo too, so they could actually see it, like, working in a fully existing repo while their repo imports and all of that. So I really enjoyed that. Like, how do we get, I guess, like, what's the call to action? You have a free trial on the site?
Yep. Yeah. So we have a free trial. A lot of our customers will request a demo, and so we can sort of walk them through the features. Like I said, there's so many different questions that we can answer, and usually the best way for us to create value for people in a time efficient way is for them to tell us sort of what their challenges have been, or where their organization has struggled over the last year. And for us to use that to sort of guide a conversation with them. The best of these conversations happen when the user has already imported a couple of their own repos. We allow, I think we might be the only product in our space that allows this, but a user can just sign up for a GetClear account without having to go through some account manager or salesperson or anything. And so they can, from our homepage, sign up for an account and import up to 3 repos. And we can then use that data in our demo, so that we can talk specifically, and this is kind of what I spend a lot of my life doing these days, I can talk specifically to a company, like, this is what I'm seeing on your team relative to similar companies that we've looked at. It seems like your developers are sort of losing productivity, say Friday morning was a recent example that I found.
Doing leader bits.
It is a really popular time to do the learning and to do, like, you know, company improvement. And so there's value to that, obviously, but there's a cost to it as well. And so you just want to make companies conscious of the decisions they're making, right? And leader bits is, of course, a decision that in the long term is going to make them a much more effective company. But in the short term, you can measure and see, like, oh, but we got a little bit less programming done right at this time. And so that's really what I try to focus on, is I think, you know, a point that you'd made during our lunch that I've reflected on several times since, is that you always want to be the person that's creating value for other people. You want to, like, dedicate your life, and as much as a person can do something like so grandiose, but you want to dedicate your time to understanding what people need, and to give that to them in sort of the best, smallest package possible that solves their needs and understands them deeply. And for us, what that looks like is people importing their actual data and us going through that data with them to show them basically, this is how your team is operating today. This is what your team is working on today. These are who your domain experts are today. And these are what we think your team could look like tomorrow. This is where we see opportunities for us to be able to help you make your developers, more productive, to be able to get answers to their questions more quickly, to be able to understand their own work. All of those things become possible when we can really have a one-on-one conversation with a customer using their own data and basically walk through it to them and help them get that edge that they need to understand their team on a really profound level. So that's usually how people sort of end up becoming GetClear customers, is they're curious. It only takes 5 minutes to start that repo import, and if that looks good, then they'll have a conversation with us where we talk about the data. And if that's all the value we can create for them, so be it. Like, we're happy to give free ideas about where a team looks like it's stuck or where opportunities might be. But if they get value from that, then we can go so much further to give them a tool that they can use every day to better understand their team, and that their developers can actually use to understand what their peers are working on and how they can become more proficient themselves. So that's what we're trying to do.
I have an idea. All right. Okay. So this is just, we could love it or hate it. It's okay. So you're all about measuring things and data. I think it'd be cool to take a company, whether it's like one of our customers or like one of our newer customers, one of your existing customers, and maybe that has like 10 engineering teams, right? And then put five, and then we put analytics across all 10, but we only give 5 of them management training, right?
I like this,
right?
Yeah.
And we'll do a baseline where we track them all without any training. Like, we track all 10, I don't know exactly, I'm just off the top of my head. We track all 10 teams for like 2 or 3 months. Just get like a baseline, then give one of the teams management training. So their leaders, they understand vision, motivation, how to grow their teams, how to inspire them, how to focus, like how to get them to work from the human level of things. And then we let the data like speak.
Wow. That's
great. Like, see if we can we make a measurable impact on the engineering team through management training. Like, because no leadership company wants to actually do this. Like, they're scared the hell of it that it's not going to work. Like, I see what happens, because we have like over 1500 people on. It's like, we know it happens, but it would be so cool to have a third party, right? Like, to have GetClear's analytics running on it and then have our stuff come in. Cause then it's like, it just makes the data more truthy. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's what I think. It's a beautiful idea, because I think that any earnest attempt to improve has to be informed by measurement. You can have all the great feelings in the world that I'm learning something, I'm understand something better than I did before thanks to LeaderBits, but if you can't measure that, and if you can't actually sort of prove out those outcomes with unbiased data, then there's 10 other potential improvements that you could make that you could also feel like they're going well and also could not be measured, So what makes that idea so captivating, at least for me, is that we want to create the measurement that allows people to run experiments like that. You know, it's like what I was talking about earlier, where in a sense, a large enterprise is just, 100 productivity experiments that are running, where you can understand like which of these teams, which of these experiments is actually working, which of these teams is getting the most stuff done, which is closing the most tickets, which is having the most code written, which is reducing the most tech debt. Whatever is important to the team, whatever metrics matter to their project managers or their CTO, GetClear can help them measure that. And so an experiment like the one you're proposing here becomes really potent way for a company to multiply, by potentially 2x or 3x or however much the efficacy of what they're doing and how much they can get done, which is sort of the very definition of what a successful company is, a company that's getting a lot of stuff done. So I think that makes a ton of sense. I would love to help participate in whatever way we can to run a sort of a control based experiment, yeah, where we could try to pick apart, like, does this help? How much does it help? What kind of teams does it help? And how can we sort of create more of these outcomes for other companies that could benefit from that kind of instruction?
Yeah, we definitely have to try it with like two or three different companies and like 10 teams each. Why don't I ask around if you're cool with that, would you do like a free trial with them for a couple months? We could actually do like a co-branded case study or something.
Yeah.
No, would you be into great. That?
Case studies is a big area that I think is an opportunity for us. And we just, it's kind of like, like what I was talking about earlier with the last 5% of polish. It's something that I know we should do, but it's really hard for me to carve out time to create a well-orchestrated case study. So it's something that's sort of perpetually, we're almost doing this, but I would love to be able to create a real substantiated study that people could go to and would present them evidence from a well-controlled setting as to what they can realistically expect to get from both from the combination of their practices from Get Clear and from Leaderbits. And so I think that sounds great. I think that could really sort of go straight to your MO, which is creating value for people. I think that makes a lot of sense on a lot of different levels and ought to benefit a lot of companies that could be run a little bit better.
Yeah, I've also seen recently, like two or three companies in a space will get together and do something. Like they'll do a case study or something together. And I thought that was kind of interesting. And I like you. So like, I don't mind spending time with you and hanging out. I think, and I have the network to do it too. And I know that there's certain people out there that they really care, they want to improve. And it's like, I think that if we could, why wouldn't they? Yeah. The people you want to be around, that's who it is. So I'll drive it forward and I'll push around and see if we can get some interest from a couple people, and then we can, I don't know. Yeah, that was spontaneous and fun. That was pretty cool.
What's the worst that's going to happen? You know, like Joel's spontaneous idea, like could get them, 50% more measurable productivity, not just us telling them, like, it seems like your people are more productive. We can actually prove out that their team is doing better. And so I like it. I would suspect that a lot of your network is going to like it too, because the worst thing that can happen is you get free services that make you about as productive as you were before. Oh, well, if you get free services that make you 50 or 100% more productive than you were before, like, cool, sign me up.
Dude, this is exciting. This is a really cool podcast. We did it, man. We made a podcast.
Holy cow. What? We did it?
We did it. It's done. But is there anything that we missed or that we didn't get?
I don't think so. No, I think, well, let me double check. Yeah. Yeah. You asked a lot of great questions. And
get a free trial on getclear.com. Right, yep. Getclear.com.
Yep.
Get a free Getclear.com,
and we also have a product open repos that a person can visit, and this is kind of another way that we try to make it really easy for a CTO or a VP to understand how GetClear works. You can actually see GetClear working for a lot of the biggest open source repos that already that they probably heard of, like React or Angular or TensorFlow, all these different like really high profile open source projects, which a lot of companies have as their libraries, are instrumented with GetClear. And so you can actually see the 20 developers that are working on these projects and sort of what their commit activity browser looks like, and how, if you were a manager of that team, you would be able to much more rapidly see sort of the domain of interest and expertise for the people on those teams. And so that's another opportunity to kind of click around. But really, like the most value that we see created is when people will just sign up for a trial and then chat with us over a demo. Hopefully they'll come to GetClear and give it a shot, and we would love to try to help them.
Yeah, I'm not shy about promoting like really awesome products. So getclear.com. And yeah, you'll get to meet like Bill and his team. Great people. Right?
I like it. I'm awesome. On board with that.
Dude, I'm excited.
Hell yeah.
I'm pumped. Well, you have a fantastic day, my friend. And then we'll circle back as we start to produce this stuff, and then as I get feedback from other people. on the idea of the case study.
All right, great. Thanks a bunch, Joel.
Talk soon, Bill.
Yep. Thanks, Jake. Bye-bye.
See you, bud. Bye.